Now for the boring part, Reacher said. Hours and hours of nothing. The picture settled to a steady shot of an empty area with the timer rushing backward. Absolutely nothing happened. The level of detail coming off the original tape was better than the copy, but there wasn't much in it. It was gray and milky. Okay for a surveillance situation, but it wouldn't have won any technical awards. You know what? Reacher said. I was a cop for 13 years, and I never found anything significant on a surveillance tape, not even once.
Me neither, Nagley said. The hours I spent like this.
At 6 a.m., the tape jammed to a stop, and Reacher ejected it and fast-wound the second tape to the far end and started the patient backward search again. The timer sped through 5 o'clock and headed fast toward 4. Nothing happened. The office just sat there, still and gray and empty.
Why are we doing this tonight? Nagley asked.
Because I'm an impatient guy, Reacher said.
You want to score one for the military, don't you? You want to show these civilians how the real pros work?
Nothing left to prove, Reacher said. We already scored 3.5. He bent closer to the screen, fought to keep his eyes focused. 4 o'clock in the morning. Nothing was happening. Nobody was delivering any letters.
Or maybe there's another reason we're doing this tonight, Nagley said. Maybe you're trying to outpoint your brother.
Don't need to. I know exactly how we compared. And it doesn't matter to me what anybody else thinks about it.
What happened to him?
He died.
I gathered that belatedly. But how?
He was killed in the line of duty just after I left the army, down in Georgia, south of Atlanta. Clandestine rendezvous with an informer from a counterfeiting operation. They were ambushed. He was shot in the head twice.
They get the guys who did it?
No.
That's awful.
Not really. I got them instead.
What did you do?
What do you think?
Okay. How?
It was a father and son team. I drowned the son in a swimming pool. I burned the father to death in a fire, after shooting him in the chest with a hollow-point .44.
That ought to do it.
Moral of the story, don't mess with me or mine. I just wish they'd known that ahead of time.
Any comeback?
I exfiltrated fast, stayed out of circulation. Had to miss the funeral.
Bad business.
The guy he was meeting with got it, too. Bled to death under a highway ramp. There was a woman as well, from Joe's office. His assistant, Molly Beth Gordon. They knifed her at the Atlanta airport.
I saw her name on the roll of honor.
Reacher was quiet a beat. The video sped backward. 3 in the morning, then 2:50-something, then 2:40, nothing happening. The whole thing was a can of worms, he said. It was his own fault, really.
That's harsh.
It was a stretch for him. I mean, would you get ambushed at a rendezvous?
No.
Me neither.
I'd do all the usual stuff, Nagley said. You know, arrive 3 hours early, stake it out, surveil, block the approaches.
But Joe didn't do any of that. He was out of his depth. Think about Joe. He looked tough. He was 6'6", 250, built like a brick outhouse. Hands like shovels, face like a catcher's mitt. We were clones, physically, the two of us, but we had different brains. Deep down, he was a cerebral guy, kind of pure, naive even. He never thought dirty. Everything was a game of chess with him. He gets a call, he sets up a meet, he drives down there, like he's moving his knight or his bishop around. He just didn't expect somebody to come along and blow the whole chessboard away. Nagley said nothing. The tape sped on backward. Nothing was happening on it. The square office area just sat there, dim and steady. Afterward, I was angry he was so careless, Reacher said. But then I figured I couldn't blame him for that. To be careless, first of all, you got to know what you're supposed to be careful about. And he just didn't. He didn't know. He didn't see stuff like that, didn't think that way.
So?
So I guess I was angry I didn't do it for him.
Could you have?
He shook his head. I hadn't seen him for 7 years. I had no idea where he was. He had no idea where I was. But somebody like me should have done it for him. He should have asked for help.
Too proud?
No. Too naive. That's the bottom line.
Could he have reacted at the scene?
Reacher made a face. They were pretty good, I guess. Semi-proficient, by our standards. There must have been some chance, but it would have been a split-second thing, purely instinctive. And Joe's instincts were all buried under the cerebral stuff. He probably stopped to think. He always did. Just enough to make him come out timid.
Naive and timid, Nagley said. They don't share that opinion around here.
Around here he must have looked like a wild man. Everything's comparative. Nagley shifted in her chair and watched the screen.
Stand by, she said. The witching hour approaches.
The timer spun back through 12:30. The office was undisturbed. Then at 12:16, the cleaning crew rushed backward out of the gloom of the exit corridor. Reacher watched them at high speed until they reversed into Stuyvesant's office at 7:07. Then he ran the tape forward at normal speed and watched them come out again and clean the secretarial station. What do you think? He asked.
They look pretty normal, Nagley said.
If they had just left a letter in there, would they look so composed? They weren't hurrying. They weren't furtive or anxious or stressed or excited. They weren't glancing backward at Stuyvesant's door. They were just cleaning, efficiently and speedily. He reversed the tape again and sped back through 7:07 and onward until it jammed to a stop at midnight exactly. He ejected it and inserted the first tape, wound to the far end and scanned backward until they first entered the picture just before 11:52, ran the tape forward and watched them walk into the shot, and froze the tape when they were all clearly visible.
So, where would it be? He asked.
Like Frolic speculated, Nagley said. Could be anywhere.
He nodded. She was right. Between the three of them and the cleaning cart, they could have concealed a dozen letters.
Do they look worried? He asked.
She shrugged.
Run the tape, see how they move.
He let them walk onward. They headed straight for Stuyvesant's door and disappeared from view inside. 11:52 exactly.
Show me again,
Nagley said. He ran the segment again. Nagley leaned back and half-closed her eyes.
Their energy level is a little different than when they came out, she said.
You think? She nodded.
A little slower? Like they're hesitant?
Or like they're dreading having to do something bad in there? He ran it again.
I don't know, she said. Kind of hard to interpret. And it's no kind of evidence, that's for sure, just a subjective feeling.
He ran it again. There was no real overt difference. Maybe they looked a little less wired going in than coming out, or more tired. But then they spent 15 minutes in there, and it was a relatively small office, already quite clean and neat. Maybe it was their habit to take a 10-minute rest in there, out of sight of the camera. Cleaners weren't dumb. Maybe they put their feet on the desk, not a letter.
I don't know,
Nagley said again. Inconclusive, Reacher said.
Naturally. But who else have we got?
Nobody at all.
He hit fast rewind and stared at nothing until he found 8:00 in the evening. The secretary got up from her desk, put her head around Stuyvesant's door, and went home. He wound back to 7:31 and watched Stuyvesant himself leave.
Okay, he said. The cleaners did it.
On their own initiative?
I seriously doubt it.
So who told them to?
They stopped in the foyer and found Nendick and sent him back to tidy up his equipment room. Then they went in search of Frolic and found her deep in a stack of paperwork at her desk, on the phone, coordinating Brooke Armstrong's return from Camp David.
We need to speak with the cleaners, Reacher said.
Now?
Frolic asked. No better time. Late-night interrogation always works best. She looked blank.
Okay, I'll drive you, I guess. Better that you're not there, Nagley said.
Why not?
We're military. We'll probably want to slap them around some.
Frolic stared at her.
You can't do that. They're department members, no different than me.
She's kidding, Reacher said. But they're going to feel better talking to us if there's nobody else from the department around.
Okay, I'll wait outside, but I'm going with you.
She finished up her phone calls, tidied up her paperwork, and then led them back to the elevator and down to the garage. They climbed into the Suburban, and Reacher closed his eyes for 20 minutes as she drove. He was tired. He had been working hard for 6 days straight. Then the car came to a stop, and he opened his eyes again in a mean neighborhood full of 10-year-old sedans and hurricane fencing. There was orange glow from streetlights here and there, patched blacktop, and scrawny weeds in the sidewalks, the thump of a loud car stereo blocks away.
This is it, Froelich said. Number 2301.
Number 2301 was the left-hand half of a two-family house. It was a low, clapboard structure with paired front doors in the center and symmetrical windows left and right. There was a low wire fence defining a front yard. The yard had a lawn that was partly dead. No bushes or flowers or shrubs, but it was neat enough. No trash. The steps up to the door were swept clean.
I'll wait right here, Froelich said.
Reacher and Nagley climbed out of the car. The night air was cold and the distant stereo was louder. They went in through the gate, up a cracked concrete walk to the door. Reacher pressed the bell and heard it sound inside the house. They waited, heard the slap of footsteps on what sounded like a bare floor, and then something metal being hauled out of the way. The door opened and a man stood there, holding the handle. He was the cleaner from the video, no doubt about it. They had looked at him forward and backward for hours. He was not young, not old, not short, not tall, just a completely average guy. He was wearing cotton pants and a Redskins sweatshirt. His skin was dark and his cheekbones were high and flat. His hair was black and glossy, with an old-fashioned cut still crisp and neat around the edges.
Yes, he said.
We need to talk about the thing at the office, Reacher said. The guy didn't ask any questions, didn't ask for ID, just glanced at Reacher's face and stepped backward and over the thing he had moved to get the door open. It was a child's seesaw, made out of brightly colored curved metal tubes. It had little seats at each end, like you might see on a child's tricycle, and plastic horses' heads with little handlebars coming out of the sides below the ears.
Can't leave it outside at night, the guy said. It would be stolen.
Nagley and Reacher climbed over it into a narrow hallway. There were more toys neatly packed on the shelves, bright grade school paintings visible on the front of the refrigerator in the kitchen, the smell of cooking. There was a living room off the hallway with two silent, scared women in it. They were wearing Sunday dresses, which were very different from their work overalls.
We need to know your names, Nagley said.
Her voice was halfway between warm friendliness and the cold knell of doom. Reacher smiled at himself. That was Nagley's way. He remembered it well. Nobody ever argued with her. It was one of her strengths.
Julio, the man said. Anita,
the first woman said. Reacher assumed she was Julio's wife by the way she glanced at him before answering.
Maria,
the second woman said.
I'm Anita's sister.
There was a small sofa and two armchairs. Anita and Maria squeezed up to let Julio sit with them on the sofa. Reacher took that as an invitation and sat down in one of the armchairs. Nagley took the other. It put the two of them at a symmetrical angle, like the sofa was a television screen, and they were sitting down to watch it.
We think you guys put the letter in the office, Nagley said.
There was no reply, no reaction at all, no expression on the three faces, just some kind of silent, blank stoicism.
Did you?
Nagley asked. No reply. The kids in bed? Reacher asked.
They're not here,
Anita said. Are they yours or Maria's?
They're mine.
Boys or girls?
Both girls.
Where are they? She paused a beat.
With cousins.
Why?
Because we work nights. Not for much longer, Nagley said. You won't be working at all, unless you tell somebody something.
No response.
No more health insurance? No more benefits?
No response.
You might even go to jail.
Silence in the room.
Whatever happens to us will happen,
Julio said.
Did somebody ask you to put it there? Somebody you know in the office?
Absolutely no response.
Somebody you know outside the office?
We didn't do anything with any leather. So what did you do? Reacher asked.
We cleaned. That's what we're there for. You were in there an awful long time.
Julio looked at his wife like he was puzzled. We saw the tape, Reacher said.
We know about the cameras,
Julio said. You follow the same routine every night?
We have to.
Spend that long in there every night?
Julio shrugged.
I guess so.
You rest up in there?
No, we clean.
Same every night?
Everything's the same every night.
Unless somebody spilled some coffee or left a lot of trash around or something, that might slow us up some. Was there something like that in Stuyvesant's office that night?
No, Julio said. Stuyvesant is a clean guy.
You spent some big amount of time in there.
No more than usual.
You got an exact routine?
I guess so. We vacuum, wipe things off, empty the trash, put things neat, move on to the next office.
Silence in the room, just the faint thump of the far-off car stereo, much attenuated by the walls and the windows.
Okay, Negley said. Listen up, guys. The tape shows you going in there. Afterward, there was a letter on the desk. We think you put it there because somebody asked you to. Maybe they told you it was a joke or a trick. Maybe they told you it was okay to do it. And it was okay. There's no harm done. But we need to know who asked you. Because this is part of the game, too, us trying to find out. And now you got to tell us. Otherwise, the game is over, and we have to figure you put it there on your own. And that's not okay. That's real bad. That's making a threat against the vice president-elect of the United States. And you can go to prison for that.
No reaction. Another long silence.
Are we going to get fired?
Maria asked.
Aren't you listening? Negley said. You're going to jail, unless you tell us who it was.
Maria's face went still like a stone, and Anita's and Julio's. Still faces, blank eyes, stoic, miserable expressions straight from a thousand years of peasant experience. Sooner or later, the harvest always fails. Let's go, Reacher said. They stood up and stepped through to the hallway, climbed over the seesaw, and let themselves out into the night. Made it back to the Suburban in time to see Frolic snapping her cell phone shut. There was panic in her eyes. What? Reacher asked.
We got another one, she said. 10 minutes ago.
And it's worse.